The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbooks. Use promo code SGP when you sign up for a $4 into $256 if the college basketball underdog of your choosing pulls off the upset. That's right, promo code SGP to turn $4 into $256 for a limited time only, at DraftKings Sportsbooks. Must be 21 years or older, New Jersey, Indiana, and Pennsylvania only, new customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. We are also brought to you by BetQL. BetQL is your home for the info you need to make yourself a smarter better. NBA, college basketball, and the NHL, they've got you covered. Go to BetQL.com, promo code SGP30. That's BetQL.com, promo code SGP30 for 30% off. And next, we're brought to you by OddsCrowd. Are you the best college sports bettor in the entire country? OddsCrowd is challenging you to prove it with the free March Madness Fantasy Betting Contest with over $8,000 in cash prizes. Download their app today at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/odds. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/odds. And next, we're brought to you by Better Than Vegas. Better Than Vegas is running a free bracket-style capper contest with a chance to win up to $5,500. To enter, just go to betterthan.vegas, and don't forget to let them know that SGP sent you. And next, we're brought to you by PicksWise. Follow the PicksWise capper contest at PicksWise.com for free picks and analysis throughout the tournament from the likes of John Rothstein, Rashad Phillips, Jeff Nadeau, and more. See which expert is trending hot as they battle it out for a winner-take-all $10,000 prize over at PicksWise.com. And finally, we're also brought to you by BetterEdge. BetterEdge operates like a stock exchange for the sports world. Pick the teams that you like and have someone else buy the other side of that bet. Sign up at BetterEdge.com, promo code SGP, for a free $10 play. That's BetterEdge.com, promo code SGP.
We're back, baby. The MMA Gambling Podcast is back once again. No, it hasn't been a whole week since you last heard from us. It's only been a few days. This is our first midweek show since we've been bumped up to two shows a week. So lucky times for all of us. Happy days. I am Jeff Fox, your host. As per usual, this is episode 21, the Blackjack episode. That's all I got. The dad jokes are starting early and they're going to come fast and furious as per usual. So like I said, I'm Jeff Fox. I'm the host of this. I also edit and write for sportsgamblingpodcast.com and I run the MMA website, mma-manifesto.com. If you want to get in there, we have a pick 'em contest right now for this week's UFC on ESPN, Brunson versus Holland. It's actually sponsored by Sports Gambling Podcast. We're giving away a $50 gift card to whoever you want. So head over to mma-manifesto.com for that. As per usual, I have a co-host who does all the heavy lifting here. His name is Daniel Gumby Vreeland. He has his own podcast also, the Top Turtle MMA podcast, where he has a couple interviews with fighters that we'll be speaking of today on his podcast this week. So check that out. And he also has the Prelim Picker, where he breaks down every prelim fight, which we'll also be doing here today. So we'll see if he flip-flops any of his picks. He's been pretty good. He's been very good recently. He's been staying consistent with his picks. I think I scared him and made him do that. So anyhow, I'm speaking of the one and the only Daniel Gumby Vreeland.
You did scare me a little bit, but I told you. I got called out on Twitter like two or three times,
right,
of people telling me, well, first of all, whoever that was is listening to far too much of me. If you're listening to three podcasts every single week with my voice, first of all, thank you. That's wild because my wife and mom don't listen to that much of me. First of all, thank you. Second of all, if you're listening closely enough, too, that you can tell that I flip-flopped on a pick midweek, man, props to you. But also, maybe just go a little lighter on me because you seem to like me. So, yeah, but I won't flip up. I have been tighter on those since I got called out.
So good. It's lucky. It's good to know that me, someone who's been his friend for ages, he doesn't care what I say, but if some random troll on Twitter calls him out, then he takes notice and takes stock in his life. That's good to know.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to keep the fans happy.
Exactly. So like I said, this is our second show of the week. Our last podcast was basically us bragging about actually having a good week on our picks, because we actually nailed some picks last time, which was shocking. We plan on doing that this week also. This week we are speaking of UFC on ESPN. It would be Brunson versus Holland. Also, it's also known as UFC on ESPN 21, also known as UFC Vegas 22. I think that's it. It may be called something, UFC Fight Night, something too. Fight Night 188, possibly. I'm not sure. Any other names you want to give it, Dan?
No, I go by the Vegas ones. The hashtag UFC Vegas 22. That's right. Pretty much what I run with.
Yeah, that's usually the easier one to type also if you're writing stories. So we're going to break down all the fights on there, give you nothing but winners, because that's our new strategy now. We're actually going to pick winners. For a while there, we were, you know, just throwing losing picks in just because we thought it would be funny. But now we realize that, you know, some people may actually be losing money because of us. So now we're actually going to give you only winning picks. And we actually have the sports book that you can make these winning picks at are actually sponsoring us now. How's that for a segue? That is an amazing segue. 21 episodes. I know what I'm doing by now. I would be speaking of DraftKings Sportsbook, of course. It's that time of year again. Conference tournaments are tipping off. Bubble teams are making their final push for a bid while the top seeds are preparing for what they hope is a long run. DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is putting new customers in the center of the action. Bet $4 on an underdog and you win $256. It's that simple. So that's, once again, bet $4 on an underdog in select college basketball games, and if they win, you collect $256. The bank is open. Pick one of many select college basketball underdogs for your shot at winning $256. All it takes is a $4 bet. There's no better way to put your college basketball knowledge to the test than to put your money where your mouth is with DraftKings Sportsbook. Don't worry if college basketball isn't for you. DraftKings Sportsbook offers great odds and promotions on golf. As I go through puberty here, golf, hockey, and actually MMA, we're going to be quoting them today also, and so much more. So make sure you head over to DraftKings. They're safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Make sure you download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code SGP, of course, when you sign up, and you can turn $4 into $256 if the underdog of your choosing pulls off the upset. So code SGP, you turn $4 into $256 for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Now the fun part, the terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older. New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or Indiana 1-800-9-WITH-IT. How was that?
You did much better. Way faster this time. It sounded like a real TV commercial now.
That's what I'm going for. This was all live too, guys. We were not. This is no post-production tricks. No auto-tune or any tricks there. All right. So once again, the odds we're going to be quoting in the on the podcast today will be from our friends over at DraftKings, except for a last minute fight, which I don't think any odds are posted for yet. And it's a chunky guy fight, guys. We're excited about that one. So we're going to get Dan to break down the odds for that. So let's get started at the bottom, work our way up to the top. as per usual, I will give you the breakdown. And I actually remember the times, the starting times for a change. I'm not going to have to look them up. As of now, the prelims are starting at 7 Eastern, but that changes as fights drop off or get added on, because we've had a few. We still have one guy waiting for possibly a replacement fight. That would be Anthony Berchek. So there may be another fight added, but as of now, it's still 7 o'clock. Prelims are on ESPN2 and ESPN+. And then the main card, I believe the start time is 10 Eastern. Main card is on ESPN and ESPN+ also. And let's start off with flyweights. There's a husband and wife duo fighting on this card, which is very rare. We have it with when the De La Rosas fight. We have another one here, and it's another flyweight also. I want to say his name is Buys, but I heard Dan say, what did you call him again?
I'm almost positive it's Bays. JP, yeah, okay. Bays. You say it like the U is an A.
Right. Okay. So And Dan is the king of pronunciation. If you ever listen to his shows, he never butchers people's names. So this is good. We'll go with JP Bays. He is making his debut at Flyweight. He will be taking on Bruno Gustavo da Silva. You can call him Bruno Silva, though, for short. Even though another Bruno Silva just signed with the UFC, a light heavyweight. So it may get a little confusing, but you may want to call him Bruno Gustavo da Silva anyhow. So let's start off with da Silva. He is 10-5-2-1 as a pro with three knockouts, three submissions. Make that. In the UFC, he is 0-2-1, so he's still looking for his first W in the big leagues. He's lost his last two fights. He's really lost his last three fights because he lost his debut, but it was overturned for a drug infraction, I believe. His opponent popped for something. So he really is 0-3 if you're counting that. He does have the striking and grappling stats in his favor, but we're talking very small sample size for both these guys, 3 and 2 fights respectively and underneath the UFC banner. He's at plus 150 at DraftKings. And as for JP, don't call me Buys, call me Bays. 9-2 as a pro, 3 knockouts, 5 submissions. This will be his debut, like I said. He has fought in the Octagon before, though, on Dana White's Contender Series. He was 1-1 there. It took a couple cracks for him to get into the big show here. He's won 5 straight fights. He is 1 inch taller, 2 inches of reach, 6 years younger, minus 182. I'll take chalk on this one. I don't know a heck of a lot about Bays, but I like what I see, unless Dan has another opinion that I may take into account here.
No, I'm all over JP Bays in this fight too. And for me, the big thing is when you look at Bruno Silva in those 3 losses, and yes, I'm calling them 3 losses, because whether or not the guy popped positive or not, like he looked awful in that fight. But like if you look at his fights, he's got 9 takedowns in 3 fights. He's also shot 30, and that's not an exaggeration. He's shot 30 takedowns. And if you look at his control time, even in those fights where he's scoring the takedowns, you know, he'll have like 5 takedowns in like 1.5 minutes of control time. Because while he keeps running these takedowns over and over and over again, what happens is he fails, or when he does get the guy down, he just doesn't have the top pressure to keep him there. He's going up against a guy who's a phenomenal wrestler. So I just imagine like 2 minutes into this fight, JP Bays is either going to be on top of Bruno Silva, beating the hell out of him, looking for submissions, or as this fight goes on, Bruno Silva is going to be so tired of trying to wrestle and hold JP Bays down that he's going to get lit up on the feet too, because I also think Bays has got a huge striking advantage in this fight. So yeah, I'm all over JP Bays in this one.
All right, don't tell his wife. Dan is all over this guy. But we're both taking him. So let's move on to the ladies, women's bantamweight. Hopefully Dan won't be all over them, or we may have some lawsuits pending here. Women's bantamweight, Julia Avila. Is it Julia? I think it's Julia.
I think you just say Julia. Yeah, I'm actually not the right one here, but I think you just say Julia. I'm not really great on Lithuanian pronunciation.
No. They threw an extra J in there, but I believe it's Julia Stolyarenko. Let's break down Stolyarenko. 9-4-2 with 8 submissions. She's lost both her UFC fights, but this is spread over 2 different stints. She was cut from the UFC. I believe her first fight was in 2018. She was in the Tough Ultimate Fighter House. She was 1-1 in the Ultimate Fighter House. Got a shot in the actual real live UFC, lost that fight, and then just got recently re-signed and lost a fight again last year. So long way of saying she's 0-2 in the UFC, 1-1 and Tough. 5 years younger than Avila, plus 265 dog. Avila, who is the Raging Panda. I believe she's a Raging Panda, right? I
know
she's
a panda. Yeah, great nickname.
Yes, she's a panda that rages. So she is 8-2. 4 knockouts, 1 submission, 2-1 in the UFC. She lost her last fight, so she won her first two, is how the math works there, in case you wondered. She was on a 4-fight win streak before losing her last fight. She was in Invicta before this. She was 1-1 in Invicta. She has 2 inches of reach, striking stats in her favor. She's a very sizable minus 345. Not sure about the number, but I think I'll go chalk again here.
Yeah, I am going chalk again here as well. And it's worth noting, you know, you mentioned she went 1-1 in Invicta. That only loss is because she punched somebody in the head so hard she broke her own hand. So, like, yeah, she is 1-1 in Invicta, but for all intents and purposes, she's 2-0 in Invicta. The thing I like about Avila in this fight, too, is just that, like, if you look at Stoliarenko's fights, her favorite part of the fight is getting into the clinch and mixing it up in there, throwing some knees up tight, you know, like working for body lock takedowns and stuff like that. And I just think she's sloppier than Avila when it comes to that style of fight. Like, Avila's cleaner, Avila frames better, Avila even shoots for underhooks better. She turns her opponents better. And I just think all of those things add up to being bad news for Stoliarenko, because I also think she's at a wild disadvantage on the feet. I think Julia Avila is the far better boxer. You can see it with her knockouts. She's vicious on the feet. We saw her knock out Gina Mazzani in less than 30 seconds. Like, I'm worried about what is going to happen if Avila winds up striking with Stoliarenko. But even that being said, Stoliarenko gets to the clinch here, and I don't think it's any better for her there either. So I actually think it's going to be a very entertaining fight, but I think pretty clearly the pick here is Avila.
Right. Just for the record, pandas don't have hands, so she didn't break her hand. She broke her paw. Okay? Just for the record, see, I told you dad jokes are going to be fast and furious today, guys. And of note, Stoliarenko has been TKO'd a couple times in her career. It was ages ago, 2014, 2015, but that is of note. She has been knocked out, so she's not immune to that by any means. But yeah, we're both going on with Raging Panda to Rage here, which moves us. We're flying right along here. We're agreeing with each other too, which is hopefully that doesn't stick for too long here. Bantamweights, Montel Jackson versus Jesse Strader. We will go with Strader, another newcomer to the octagon, making his debut. He is very inexperienced, 5-1 as a pro, 4 knockouts though, which are impressive. He's won his last 2 fights all via knockout, but he hasn't fought since August of 2019. Just update on those numbers. I was tracking on us how people are doing when they've been out of action for over a year. Right now, they're at 48% winning, so it's still kind of 50-50. It's not hasn't been quite as much of a hindrance as we thought heading in, but something to note though, he has been out a while and this will be his debut. As for Montel Jackson, 9-2 pro record, 5 knockouts, 1 submission, never been finished in a fight, so she's got a couple decision losses. 3-2 in the UFC, lost his last fight. He won 3 straight before that, so basically lost his debut, won 3 straight and then lost his last one. He got his way into the UFC on the Contender Series. He's 1-0 on there. As for the tail of the tape, 2 inches taller, 1 inch of reach, 1 year younger. He's at -560 at Strader's +400. I don't know about that number, but I guess I got to go with Jackson regardless.
Yeah, and at first I was a little hesitant on the number as well. Like, I even contemplated possibly picking Strader because we're talking about odds here, right? And he does have big bombs that he throws repeatedly. But if you also look at the type of person who has beat Montel Jackson, he's lost to Ricky Simone and he's lost to Brett Johns, who basically just played his game plan a little bit better than he does, right? Like, they kept pressing him against the cage. They won those short grappling exchanges. They out-wrestled him a little bit. And, like, Strader is not the type of guy to do that. He's the type of guy to go in there and do what we've seen those other guys from Combate do. You know, we saw Rafa Garcia do last week, and we saw Marcelo Rojo do last week. They just go in there, and they throw bombs and hope somebody falls. Jackson isn't going to fight that kind of fight with him. Jackson's going to have him on the ground in pretty much no time. And I'm assuming, too, he probably finishes him as early as he wants to. You're going to see, you know, like, I mean, he Darce choked Brian Kelleher. And, like, Brian Kelleher is that, like, tough standing striker like Strader is, only he's better and more experienced. So to see, you know, Montel Jackson do that to Kelleher, I got to imagine he's going to do something similar here to Strader. And even with those odds where they are, I still can't bring myself to pick Jesse Strader.
Yeah, odds makers generally aren't off this much. So you don't see a lot of +400s coming through, with a win, especially one who's been inactive and making his debut. So yeah, we'll both go with Jackson, but we'll make our $2 off this bet or whatever. But regardless, we got to tell you who's going to win. So that's what we're going to do. Another place where you can get lots of advice on how to win bets. Another amazing segue by me, even though I can't say segue for some reason. That would be BetQL. If you're looking to get an edge and make smarter bets during March Madness, BetQL's algorithms scan thousands of data points across every game to find the best bets. Easily find the most profitable bets based on their top betting trends. Your brackets may bust, but your bankroll doesn't have to. Head to BetQL.com to get started today. You can head to the App Store or Google Play and download the BetQL app. Bet smarter, not harder. And make sure you use promo code March30 for 30% off BetQL for a year. That's BetQL.com, promo code March30. I was on there today and I saw they have some, I think I saw like a 69 or 70% accuracy or success rate on an NBA game. So definitely check out their app for any, whatever sport you want to bet, and you can probably get some good advice. All right. What do we have next here? Dan, we have, how about some middleweights? Trevin Giles, Roman Dolidze. We'll go with Trevin Giles. He is 13-2 professionally, 6 knockouts, 5 submissions, 4-2 in the UFC. He's won 2 straight fights. He TKO'd his opponent last fight. He's 4 years younger in this matchup. Not 4 years younger than his last fight. Let's see. He's not a Benjamin Button type of thing. He's 4 years younger than Dolidze, obviously. He's a plus 125 underdog here. Dolidze is 8-0 as a pro, with 4 of those coming via knockout, 3 via submission, so he's a finisher. 2-0 in the UFC. This is a very late replacement. This was just announced, I think, about a week ago today or so. He normally fights at 205. Has he fought at middleweight before? Do you know, Dan, or no?
I can't remember him having fought at middleweight, because when I saw him filling in, I had sort of assumed Trevin Giles was moving up, but by all indications here, it looks like Dolidze had been preparing for middleweight, and he's going to do it here on short notice.
Yeah, that's something to keep in mind. It could be, you don't usually, when guys take short notice fights, or guys or gals, they tend to go up a weight class instead of down one, especially for the first time. So this is something to keep in mind. He may be the bigger man, but he may not make weight, or you have to severely deplete himself to make it. Regardless, he'll also be 2 inches taller, 2 inches of reach, striking advantage in his favor, minus 155. Kind of torn in this one just because of the late replacement and the lower weight class. So we'll see what Dan thinks first, and then I will – maybe I'll tag along or not. We'll see.
So here's the thing about this one. You're right. The lower weight class worries me. The late notice replacement worries me. He is kind of already a pretty large-looking light heavyweight. So for him to be at middleweight, you know, even more alarming. The other thing I will say that, you know, gives me pause about Roman Dolidze, because I was really big on him after his debut. You know, after that debut, we found out who Kadys Abrigamov is, and that's a guy who loses 37 straight fights in the UFC and is inexplicably still fighting for him, although I do think they've released him since then. But I'm pretty sure he lost, like, you know, 100 fights in a row. And then this last fight with John Allen, which I don't think should have been split. I think it was pretty clearly Dolidze, but he just didn't look really like he was interested in going out there and finishing John Allen, right? Like, he didn't throw a ton of volume. It didn't look like he was trying to capitalize on big situations. And I think for me, that gives me a little pause against a veteran like Trevin Giles, and especially when you're going to be messing with weight class. So yeah, I'm really torn in this one too, because I've seen Trevin Giles do some real dumb shit that, like, worries me all the time. Like those back-to-back submission losses to Zach Cummins and Gerald Meerschaert, just they'll haunt me forever because I picked them in both of those fights, I'm pretty sure. Because, like, he just, like, was winning fights, and he just kept going to places where he wasn't winning them. And since then, he's looked better. So I have a little bit more hope that happens. I am hesitant to always pick him, but I just see too many red flags right now with Dolidze against a veteran like Giles. So I'm going to take Giles, especially because you're going to get dog money there.
Yeah, I had Giles, but a question mark beside him. I was thinking, got to have a couple dogs come through in a car, and I was thinking he was one worthy of it, just basically because of the reasons we both mentioned there, late replacement and the weight issue, or potential weight issue. Late replacement fighters, for people keeping track at home, since the start of 2020, they have won 36% of their fights, so they are not doing so hot. So, and this one is very late. This, we're talking like he's have maybe a week and a half to prepare for this, possibly top. So we are both going the dog there, and we have not differed yet in a pick. Well, it worked out well last week doing that. I got one better than you, the one that we went opposite on. So that's that's our new strategy, Dan. Two heads are better than one.
I feel like we have some differences coming up. I have a strong feeling about it.
Well, maybe I'll just flop when I hear what you say. We'll see. All right, let's go lightweights. Leonardo Santos, Grant Dawson. I think this might have been I was thinking this. No, this one wasn't one of the hard ones. I was thinking that there are some tough ones coming up, though. We'll start with Santos. He's 18-3-1 with 3 knockouts and 9 submissions, 7-0-1 in the UFC. He's won 6 straight fights. He had a decision thrown in, or a draw thrown in there. He was also in the Tough House, Ultimate Fighter House. He was 3-1 in there. He's been around since 2002. He's, I believe, 41 years old. So that's something to keep in mind here.
Second oldest fighter on the card, too.
Oh, yes. There you go. Wait a minute. Who's older than him?
Marion Renault is 43 years old. She's actually older than Alexei Oleinik.
Yeah, you wouldn't guess it, but yes, it's true. Spoiler alert. We're going to break down that fight soon, but yeah, she's old. As for Santos, 2 inches taller, 3 inches of reach, plus 180 coming back if you want to bet on him. As for Dawson, 16-1 with 3 knockouts, 11 submissions, 4-0 in the UFC, 1-0 on Dana White Contender Series. He's won 7 straight fights. He's 14 years younger. Striking and grappling stats in his favor, minus 225. Yeah, all that adds up. For me, I'm going to have to pick him in this fight.
Yeah, and it's kind of crazy, by the way, that Leonardo Santos has no UFC losses in 8 fights.
Right.
7-0-1. That, first of all, is baffling. It's also baffling that it took 8 years for it to happen. So, yeah, I'm taking Dawson in this one, too. And for me, the biggest push for me to take Dawson is he's coming up to lightweight for this fight. So you might remember he had a catchweight bout in there at 150 pounds. Before that, he had missed weight for a featherweight bout. You know, he had a previously scheduled catchweight bout. So it seems like he has been, like, inching towards moving to lightweight anyway. He's one of those guys who got into the sport super young, and I think his body is starting to mature to the point where, like, oh, shit, like, featherweight doesn't work anymore. Similar to, like, Jake Matthews did. And for me here, Grant, that's the best thing that could happen for Grant Dawson, because down at featherweight, he kept an amazing pace. He is, first of all, very physically strong, but also able to keep that pace up for a while. In constant, and with all of that going on in a terrible weight cut, you know, like a big ass weight cut for him to get down there, he was still able to do that. So now we're going to see him go up a weight class. We're going to see him healthier and able to put that pressure on even more. And I think, you know, combine that with the fact that, you know, I've got all the respect in the world right now for all that James Krause is doing at Glory MMA. In addition to that, too, like the fact that he's just kind of a bad style matchup for Leonardo DeSantos, because he probably can get him down when he needs to. So, yeah, you got to go with the cardio machine at 27 years old over the 41-year-old who hasn't fought in a couple of years. But the change of weight class for me gives me even more reason to really like Grant Dawson in this fight.
See, that's why Dan's on the show, the insight. I forgot all about the weight class, but yes, that is a very important point. All signs are pointing to Dawson in this one, which probably means we're going to be wrong. But regardless, the main event of the prelims is a women's bantamweight with the aforementioned Marion Renault versus Macy Chaisson, another massive age gap here. This was a fight that was scheduled. When was this scheduled? Do you remember? I'm looking it up here. Do you remember off the top of your head when it was originally scheduled?
I believe that this fight was originally scheduled for 2 weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Overeem and Volkov. You're wrong.
Oh, so that's like a month and a half.
Month and a half. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. And then it was rescheduled again on the 20th, and then Chaisson got hurt. So this is the third crack. So yeah, it's got a month and a half, and then a month ago, and now. All right, you were close though. Did we ever go to air with this one? I'm not sure if we ever broke this one down on air or not. We will now, regardless. So let's talk about Marion Renault. She's 9-6-1 with 5 knockouts, 3 submissions, never been finished in a fight. That's a lot of submission, a lot of decision losses there. 5-5-1 in the UFC. After coming out of the gate blazing hot, she's lost 3 straight. She's at plus 175. She's got a tough test this week. Macy Chaisson, one of the up-and-comers in the division. She's 6-1, 2 knockouts, 2 submissions, 4-1 in the UFC, but she's not fought since last February. 5 inches taller, 4 inches of reach, 14 years younger. Again, that's 2 fights in a row. We got an age gap of 14 years, which is wild. Striking stats are in her favor, which are still the number one predictor for a winner of a fight. It's coming in right at 69%. predictor of a winner of a fight, and she's at -215. I guess I'm gonna have to take her. I think I was taking her last time if we ended up break this one down last time, and I'm sure you're taking her too.
I think we did go to air with it too, and yeah, I'm taking her for a couple of reasons. Number one, man, am I a sucker to pick people training out of Fortis MMA, although I may betray that a little bit later on. So that's first of all, love saves odd. He's great. The other thing about Macy Chazon that I like in this fight is that, you know, I had a little bit of a pause for her after I saw her get beat by Lena Landsberg in the way that she did. She got taken down. It's a little nerve-wracking. And then in her next fight, she came out and, like, put all of those to rest kind of by beating up Shanna Young, who's, you know, not as good of a fighter as Lena Landsberg, but she definitely had worked on the things that had cost her in the fight before. And then you add in all of the stuff that you just talked about, the age difference, the cardio difference, the physicality difference. She's almost 6 foot tall fighting in this division. I just can't imagine that Marion Renault is going to be able to get close enough to her and comfortable enough with grappling her. I think for all of those reasons, Chazon probably keeps the distance, probably pokes away at her. And I wouldn't even be surprised to see her with some top game grappling her on her own here.
Yeah, someone in the UFC must not like Marion Renault, which is surprising. She seems like a lovely lady, but yeah, because this would make four straight losses for her, and that would probably be the end of her in
and
the
against
UFC.
Against some real killers, too. Like, oh, yeah. It's worth mentioning, you know, like those three losses are to Kat Zingano, Yana Kunitskaya, who just went out and looked like a beast, and Raquel Pennington. Like, oof. I mean, like, yep. Macy Chazon is like a walk in the park. Well, maybe not a walk in the park compared to them, but like, That seems like an appropriate step down, but man, it's not much of a step down.
Yeah, no doubt. Hopefully it's not a walk in the park or we're going to look pretty dumb come Saturday. Dumber than normal. All right, so that as of now, that wraps up the prelim portion of the card. Like I said off the top, Anthony Burchak is still waiting for an opponent because...
Johnny Eduardo. Yes.
Pull it out once again. So I'll leave that hanging there for whatever kind of dirty joke you people want to think up. But yes, he pulled out once again. So that leaves us with one last fight on the prelims. We'll see if they're still looking for, as of what, Wednesday night, they're still looking for a replacement for him, Burchak, but it does not look good. Usually they have someone by this time. So before we get to the main card, let me tell you about a couple other of our sponsors, which you probably will be interested in since you're all degens. Odds Crowd will tell you about first. Are you the best college hoops better in the country? Odds Crowd is challenging you to prove it with their free March Madness fantasy betting contest. There's $8,000 in cash prizes up for grabs and less than 100 players are joined to date. So here's how it works. You place risk-free fantasy bets throughout the tournament against real odds and lines. Most profitable players rise up the leaderboard. If you're in the top three, most at the end. That's poor English, whoever wrote this. If you're in the top three at the end, you win a share of $8,000. So it starts right before the first four tips off, which is very soon. So make sure, as soon as you hear this, make sure you get on there. So how they do it, they grade it based on units and profit. The most units of profit at the end wins the cash. Players can play as many or a few picks as they like. 1, 2, or 3 unit picks, money line, spreads, totals available. So they got everything basically. And Odds Crowd isn't just fantasy betting contest. It's a social app built just for sports bettors. Free to download. You can live group chat with other bettors, track your bets, set up private betting contests with your buddies, and much more. Download the app for free or go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/odds, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/odds. And make sure you get the app. And also, make sure you check out PicksWise.com. That's PicksWise.com. Helmed by a team of trend-watching, data-devouring, sports fanatic wise guys giving you the who, how, and why behind every prediction on every game, every day, and every sport, all for free. PicksWise presents the Capper Contest to follow with the likes of John Rothstein, Rashad Phillips, and Jeff Nadeau, and six other experts all competing for a $10,000 winner-take-all prize. Follow the action for the free picks and analysis every day of the big dance by visiting PicksWise.com/March-Madness. That's PicksWise.com/March-Madness. All right, let's get to the main card. The other half of the husband-wife duo is in a women's strawweight fight here. Cheyenne, is it Cheyenne?
I think Cheyenne, yeah.
She's got a tough first and last name here. Cheyenne Bays. Versus Montserrat Ruiz, who also, what's the nickname she goes by?
Conejo.
Montserrat. All right, there we go.
Conejo, and, which is Spanish for my four-year high school Spanish tells me Conejo means rabbit.
Okay, so I don't know if you want to be a rabbit in a fight. Hmm. No, I don't think I've ever seen a rabbit win a fight, so that may not be a good nickname, but we'll find out on Saturday. All right, so both these ladies are making their debut. We'll talk about the rabbit first. 9-1 as a professional, 3 knockouts, 2 submissions. She only has one decision loss on her record. That's the only blemish. This is a late replacement debut for her, so that's a couple red flags right there. She has fought in Invicta before. She was 1-1 in Invicta. She won her last fight via submission, which was her last time she fought, and she is +275 in this one. Bays is, like I said, also making her debut. She's 5-1 as a pro with 1 knockout. Also never been finished in a fight, so I think if you want to put some props down, you may want to make this one a decision win for whoever you're picking. Like I said before, this will be her debut also. She won her way in on Dana White's Contender Series. She also fought Invicta, lost her only fight there. She has won 4 straight fights since then. And she will be 3 inches taller, 2 inches of reach, 2 years younger, -375. Sounds like I'm going to have the husband and the wife both win on Saturday.
And this is the one I was sure we were going to be different on, because this is the one where I'm betraying Fortis MMA and picking against one of their fighters for the first time. Because, listen, I know that the hype is behind Cheyenne Bays, right? Like, there's a reason she's betting off, you know, upwards of negative 300, right? She almost negative 400 we're talking right now. But if you look at her record, it is really not impressive, right? Like, her best win is over Hillary Rose, who's 4-2 at the moment. Like, that's her very best win, and it's not close. Like, that's her best win by a mile. You know, I mean, maybe you can go back and look at, you know, she had a fight over Lindsay Garbat, who's now, if you look, 8-7, I guess maybe you could count that one. But, like, she hasn't fought a high level of competition. And that's not true if you look at Montserrat Ruiz, who's fought Janissa Morandon, who is really good over in Invicta, 10-4. And not only did she beat her with a very nice hip throw that she finished with a scarf hold key lock with her legs, which was a really sick submission. You got her kind of using the 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu style along with the King's MMA style of striking. I actually really love Montserrat Ruiz in this fight. So when I saw the odds come in like this, I thought it was wrong for some reason. Like, they just mislisted it, and they hadn't. Like, she is actually a huge underdog in this one, and I think there's not only value on her at that number, I think if it was a pick'em, I think I still might take Ruiz, because the other really cool thing about her, in addition to her great grappling, is that she moves forward constantly. She's not afraid of anything. She's kind of crazy when it comes to her striking. And if you look at the moments Cheyenne Bays lost on the Contender Series, she lost those moments entirely when Hillary Rose decided, I'm moving forward and I'm going to dictate this fight. And that's what Ruiz is going to do for this entire fight. So I actually like Ruiz a lot in this fight. And I don't want to say this, I almost kind of disagree with you about the take this by decision, because Ruiz's grappling skills are very high level. And I'm interested to see, you know, maybe against an inexperienced opponent like Cheyenne Bays, who's only, you know, you mentioned she's only, what, 4-1, 5-1? She's only 5-1. Not a lot of experience to be fighting somebody who's this high level on the ground game.
A very, very good breakdown. All of it wrong, but very, very good regardless. But yeah, no, if all this is true, Mr. Vreeland, that's a very nice score at +275. So yeah, it's hard with two newcomers, odds being this high. I probably would just skip this fight if I wasn't a degenerate and had to bet $100 in every fight. But yeah, as of now, I'll take Bays, just because it'll be a good story. Husband and wife will win. But Dan's a hater, so he doesn't like doesn't want a love story to come through. He wants the rabbit to beat up the I don't know what Bays' nickname is.
I want to say it's like Warrior Princess. Oh yeah, it is, or something like that. It is. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
Is that a Xena reference? Is that are we maybe open to know? Does our audience know what a Xena reference is?
Probably. Yeah. Yeah, maybe I should go with the rabbit after that. I can't flip-flop. All right, let's go with welterweight Song Kinan, or Kinan Song, depending on how you want to say it, if you want to say it properly or if you want to say it like Westerners. He will be fighting a welterweight fight against Max Griffin. Let's go with Kinan first. He will be making his return. He's been out since February 2020. He is 16-5, 8 knockouts, 6 submissions. He is a finisher at welterweight. He's 4-1 in the UFC. He's won 2 straight fights, including a KO win his last time in the octagon last year. He's an inch taller, 5 years younger than Griffin. He's at plus 140. Griffin, 16-8, 8 knockouts, 2 submissions, 4-6 in the UFC. He won last fight via TKO. That was his only win in the past 3 fights, and he's only won 2 of his last 6. He's got 5 inches of reach, so despite being shorter, he's got long arms. Striking and grappling stats are in his favor. He's at minus 177. I need another dog, so I'm going to take Song Kinan in here, despite the stats going against him at plus 140.
I'm going to disagree with you on this one, and right, for a couple of reasons. First of all, we need to talk about the fact that that TKO win over Ramiz Brahimi is a ear explosion TKO for Max.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He is coming off of that violent ear explosion, which is, first of all, enough reason to pick him in his own right. But on a more serious note, the reason I don't like Kanan Song, and I don't mean to say I don't like a fighter, like he's a perfectly good fighter, but my issues with him in picking him for a fight is he really gets by on 2 things. He has very explosive power with his hands. He's got great knockout power. And when he does get in grappling exchanges, he's very physically strong. He's not the most technical grappler you'll ever see, but he's almost able to just muscle his way through either a takedown attempt or a counter or whatever it is. And for me, that just makes him a really, 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 really easy pickings for Max Griffin, because Max Griffin, you can't say enough about his physicality. The guy is incredibly strong. He puts in tons of work in his strength and conditioning. And in addition to that, too, he's so freaking tough. If you look at the names of the guys he stood with for 15 minutes and didn't get knocked out by them, I don't think Kanan Song is the guy who's going to do it, right? He stood for 15 minutes with Elizu Zaleski dos Santos and Mike Perry and Thiago Alves and Cowboy Oliveira. All of these guys stood with him for 15 minutes, and they just had it out for 15 minutes. I just have such a hard time believing Kanan Song is going to knock him out. And when you kind of put that in with the fact that, I do think Max Griffin probably has an advantage technique-wise in the grappling and probably will wind up putting more volume on Kanan Song, I kind of just expect, Max Griffin here to win a decision. And I will say, for as far as props go on this one, I actually think that this one is pretty ripe for picking fight goes to decision as well, because, like I said, Max Griffin hasn't been finishing a lot of people, and he's also, tougher than a $3 steak. So, knowing all of that, Griffin wins by decision. If you do like Max Griffin, it's coming in at plus 115. So I think there's probably a lot of value in that play right there.
Okay, slip up number 2 for Dan. That's 2 in a row for him. That's a shame, but we'll move right along. See if you can get this one right. Bantamweight, Adrian Yanez, who was on the Top Turtle podcast this week, right?
Correct.
Misremembering that? Excellent. Adrian, so we know who Dan's going to pick already, guys. Adrian Yanez versus, because he only has winners on his podcast. Adrian Yanez, Gustavo Lopez. Mr. Lopez, 12-5 with 5 knockouts, 6 submissions, 1-1 in the UFC. He won his last fight via submission after dropping his debut. He also fought in Bellator one time. He won that fight. Grappling stats, small sample size, but grappling stats are in his favor. He's at plus 160. As for Yanez, he's 12-3 with 7 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's never been finished in a fight. He's 1-0 in the UFC, which was a knockout win. He also is 1-0 on the Dana White Contender Series. He's also 1-0 in Bellator. 2 inches of height, 3 inches of reach, 4 years younger, striking stats in his favor, small sample size, like I said before. Minus 200 he's coming in at, and I'll take him, and I'm sure Dan is too.
Yeah, I'm going to take him too. But the one thing I will say is I like Adrian Yanez in this fight. I like him quite a bit. But I would also say I think Gustavo Lopez, based on these odds, is being disrespected a little bit, because I do think that this is a lot closer of a fight. The difference maker for me in this fight and why I'm taking Adrian Yanez is because I think that he probably has a pretty clear advantage when it comes to the striking. I think he's a better striker, undoubtedly. And I think a lot of people sleep on his jiu-jitsu skills. He's actually a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. That's how he started getting into martial arts. He's incredible on the ground. So, Gustavo Lopez, that's his path to victory, and I think it's a real path. I just think Yanez probably shores that up with the fact that he is a good grappler. So I expect Yanez to win on the feet here, and I like him. I probably don't like the negative 200 price tag on him. He's not somebody who I would consider putting in a parlay, and, you know, he's not maybe the play that I'm reaching for at negative 200 right away. If that number does come down by fight time, sure, yeah, I'd be much happier with it around, you know, minus 160 or something like that. But I'm still definitely going with Yanez here.
All right, so we may not have a hashtag throw him in a parlay here, but we do have a hashtag chunky guys coming up. I'll leave you with that cliffhanger and tell you about our last couple sponsors here first. Betterland.Vegas. Betterland.Vegas is like YouTube, but for what hashtag the gens only care about, which is sports betting. Betterland Vegas is running a free bracket style capper contest with a chance to win $5,500. To enter, just go to Betterland.Vegas and don't forget to let them know SGP sent you. Don't forget to go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV to subscribe to our channel, Betterland.Vegas page. That would be it, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. I will have a video up there probably Saturday morning with my picks, and Dan with that rival podcast of his, Top Turtle, probably will have some videos up this week too, I assume, right?
Yeah, I'm 3-0 on Betterland.Vegas, by the way. Yeah, 3-0, haven't been able to touch my picks. So you're definitely going to want to make sure you check out who I picked this week.
Well, see, Dan, he just came. He just showed his true colors. He's been holding out and giving you bad picks on this podcast. He's been saving them for his other podcast. Interesting. Good to know. That's the type of info you need to know. That's to get an edge in betting, which brings us to Better Edge. There's another segue. Yeah. Better Edge allows you to buy and sell betting positions like a stock market. Since you're buying positions from other sports bettors, there's no house. It's legal in more than 40 states. They post, basically, you post the plays you like and have someone at Better Edge Marketplace take the other side. They have a ton of other fun against the spread picking contests as well. Sign up today at Better Edge and use promo code SGP, of course, and you get a free $10 play. So that's Better, it's spelled BETTOR, edge.com, promo code SGP. All right, we left you hanging long enough for our hashtag chunky guy fight of the night, and it just got chunkier in the past couple hours before we were recording. It was supposed to be Ty Tuivasa versus Dontell Mays. Dontell Mays just got pulled for undisclosed reasons. They said he didn't get cleared, I think, is what they're saying. It's a health issue of some sort. I was questioning whether or not he really is a chunky guy, but I don't have to worry about it anymore because we've got a chunky replacement opponent with a perfect name for like a 1920s also-ran boxer, Henry Hunsucker. Harry Hunsucker. Henry would work too, though, but Harry Hunsucker. That's not a joke. That's the man's name. He's fighting Ty Tuivasa. Mr. Hunsucker will be taking this fight on extremely short notice, like Wednesday to Saturday is his notice to fight Ty Tuivasa. So he's a brave man, regardless of the jokes I'm making about his name. He's 6-3 as a pro, 2 knockouts, 4 submissions. So he's all nothing but finishes on this guy's resume. All of his losses have come via KO, so that's something to keep in mind also. This will be his debut, and like I said, this is short notice. He was on Dana White's Contender Series, and he lost that fight to Jared Vanderaw, who hasn't looked so hot in the octagon since he's made it to the big show. As for Tuivasa, the man who likes to drink stuff out of people's shoes, he's 10-3 with 9 knockouts, 4-3 in the UFC. KO win last time in against Stefan Struve. He lost 3 straight fights before then, but they bumped him up quickly and had him fighting some tough competition. The first fights before that, he fought Junior Dos Santos, Blago Ivanov, and Sergey Spivak. So he was fighting some difficult guys there. No one named Hunsucker. He also, as of the last weigh-ins, he was right around the 265 limit, and Hunsucker last fight was around the 250 limit. So he should possibly have a weight advantage here. Hashtag chunky guy. He's 4 years younger. Also, grappling stats are also in his favor. First of all, what do you think the line will be in this? The line has not been posted as of this recording because the fight just got it. I don't even think it's officially been announced yet.
Yeah, I don't know if it's officially been announced yet either. And if you're looking for a line here, like Tuivasa was betting off at negative 250 against Dontell Mays. And I think Hunsucker's probably 3 steps down from Dontell Mays. So like with that being said, I'm kind of expecting this to probably come in like the negative 500 to 600 range. for Tai Tuivasa, which obviously in a heavyweight fight gives me a little pause. Like, you don't want to pick a guy in a heavyweight fight at negative 600. That seems sort of risky. But that, with that being said, I'm still taking Tai Tuivasa in this fight. Hunsucker, like you said, did not look good against Jared Vandera. You know, he's a guy who's gotten a lot of his wins with Top Game. You know, like he won like 3 weeks ago in HR MMA, and by like, you know, getting some early shot and getting on top of the guy. He's got Kimuras and Americanas and ground and pound and rear naked chokes and all that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is that like he also couldn't do that to Jared Vandera, and Jared Vandera did it back to him. And Jared Vandera so far hasn't looked good in that department in the UFC. So for those reasons, I like just can't see him, first of all, being able to submit Tai Tuivasa. And second of all, I don't even know if I can see him standing on the feet long enough to get inside to finish Tai Tuivasa. Because, you know, like you said, Tuivasa had a rough go of it, but the dude's got dynamite for hands too. And I just kind of think that this has got Tuivasa by early KO written all over it.
Yeah, he's all of his wins except one have come via knockout, and all of Hunsucker's losses have come via knockout. So this is sounding like a prop bet. So like Dan said, the line's probably going to be ridiculous, especially for a heavyweight fight. So you may want to steer clear of the actual like money line on this fight and stick with a Tuivasa via early stoppage if you want to bet on it, which you have to because you're a degenerate and that's your role in life. You have to bet on every fight, at least $100. Minimum, hopefully more if you can afford it. Which brings us to our co-main event, lightweights, returning Gregor Gillespie. Guess he's tired of fishing and he's ready to start fighting again. He will be going up against Brad Riddle. Riddle 9-1 with 5 knockouts, 3-0 in the UFC. That's part of a 6-fight winning streak for him. He is 5 inches taller than Gillespie in this fight. He's at plus 175. Gillespie 13-1 in the UFC. He got knocked out his last fight. That was his only loss as a pro. As for him, he's got 6 knockouts, 5 submissions, 6-1 in the UFC. Like I said, he got knocked out his last fight. That was way back in November of 2019. Before that time, he's basically running over everyone with his wrestling. And then Kevin Lee head kicked him out of the undefeated world, into Dream World. Grappling stats are in his favor, which is not surprising because he is a master wrestler. He's at minus 240, and he's my pick here.
Yeah, he's my pick here too, but I do have to say I hate that line. Because, like, especially coming off super long layoff, first loss of his career, with a kick to the head, and now you're going to put him up against a guy who trains out of City Kickboxing.
Who has half his wins are via knockout. Sorry,
yeah,
trap.
Yeah, half of his wins are via knockout, and he's got, if I'm not mistaken, he's got professional Muay Thai kickboxing background too. Like, he's a guy who I really think is a talent in this division. I think I'm still leaning that I think Gregor Gillespie is going to get him down and control him in Gregor Gillespie style. But man, that Kevin Lee fight makes you pause just for a second, because like, there's no way Brad Riddell is not a better kickboxer than Kevin Lee. But like, do you write it off as a fluke? Do you like, oh, well, it's good that Gregor Gillespie gave his brain time to heal and now is probably in a better mental space? And, you know, like, there's so many different narratives with that long layoff that it gives me a huge pause before I put anything near that big line for Gillespie here. Or even do something like stick him in a DraftKings matchup or something like that, because I just don't – there's so many unanswerables about him right now. This is a great fight to answer those questions. You know, again, I'm taking him, but I don't feel good about it.
Well, maybe this will make you feel a bit better. Brad Riddell's grappling record in his 3 UFC fights. Got taken down 3 times by Alex da Silva, got taken down 8 times by Magomed Mustafaev, got taken down 3 times by Jamie Mullarkey. Does that make you feel any better? He's got 60% takedown defense.
I will say the Jamie Mullarkey one makes me feel better. The first two are pretty decent grapplers. I think Alex da Silva is kind of a sleeper in terms of his wrestling. And then, you know, anybody with a name that looks like Magomed Mustafaev,
right,
you know, just throw some consonants at it and it looks like he probably knows how to wrestle. So the Jamie Mullarkey one gives me a little bit more pause. But yeah, I mean, again, that's probably why I like him here. But like, in theory, he should have been able to do that to Kevin Lee too, right? Like, he could have taken Kevin Lee down. It's not that Kevin Lee doesn't have better grappling than Brad Riddell, but like, with what we've expected from Gregor Gillespie, we would still have expected him to get him down. And he got kicked in the face really hard.
Yeah, but Riddell's never faced anyone that wrestles like Gillespie. So that's what we're counting on at least, right?
Yeah, that's ultimately what I'm making the pick with. But like I said, with that many unanswerables, I just am not super sure.
Not only are we counting on it, we are betting on it, ladies and gentlemen. And you should be too. Which brings us to our main event. I found this one kind of hard to break down. We'll see if maybe Dan can make it a bit clearer. I'll go the opposite of whatever he says. Middleweight, Derek Brunson, Kevin Holland. Brunson, who's been around forever and has, last time I saw him, he has hair like the natural Butch Reed, rest in peace. So that's one reason to go with him. He is 21-7 with 12 knockouts and 3 submissions. He's 12-5 in the UFC. Like I said, he's been around forever. And before that, he was in Strikeforce. Strikeforce never die. 3-1 in Strikeforce. So he's got a lot of hot top-level experience. Combined, that would be, 15-6 in the big shows. He's won 3 straight fights, so it's a bit of a late career resurgence for him. And he's knocking off young prospects, too. He's won 5 of his last 7 as well. He's at plus 145. Mr. Holland, 21-5, 11 knockouts, 6 submissions. 8-2 in the UFC. He also was 1-0 in Dana White's Contender Series, 1-0 in Bellator. And he was an incredible 5-0 in 2020 alone. He won 5 fights last year. He's won 8 of his last 9 fights as well. So he is surging after losing his UFC debut. He will be 2 inches taller, 4 inches of reach, 8 years younger, striking stats in his favor, minus 175. All that stuff makes you want to pick Kevin Holland, but it's a tough one for me to pick here because Brunson should not be underestimated. Holland still is a little bit of an unknown against super top level guys.
Yeah. And that's the reason I'm taking Derek Brunson too.
Yeah.
I'm going with the underdog here because like you said, you know, you look at those 5 wins for Kevin Holland and yeah, the Jacare one looks good, but the Jacare one is actually why I like Derek Brunson in this fight is because if you look at that fight, right, Kevin Holland won that fight from the seam of his pants, throwing a punch that nobody had any business knocking anybody out with. And props to him, first of all, for having power from that position. But he's also knocking out a guy whose brain is probably made of Jell-O cubes by now. So, you know, knowing that, we can't really be real confident in what he was able to do to Jacare. Because what I saw in that fight before that happened is Jacare took him down. Jacare was taking him down and controlling him on the ground. He actually took him down twice. And it looked like he was getting into good positions when he did eventually get punched in the face, right? Like he postured up, he was looking to pass, and he got caught with something really funky. We can sort of assume Derek Brunson won't get caught with something like that and won't get knocked out from the seam of Kevin Holland's pants. Sorry, we talked about Kevin Lee earlier. Kevin Holland's pants, but like he's a guy who's got 10 takedowns in his last 3 fights, and not against slouches, against guys who are tough to take down. Like Edmund Shabazian, he manhandled Edmund Shabazian. He like took it to Ian Heinisch. Like now, while these aren't the Israel Adesanyas of the world or the Paulo Costas or anything like that, they are top 15 guys, and clearly top 15 guys are close to it in the case of Ian Heinisch, who just fell out. I think Derek Brunson has showed that he can wrestle when his striking isn't working, and I think that's an area of weakness for Holland. So I like Brunson because it gives him, you know, I think it's probably a toss-up on the feet, and he has that in the chambers to use if it's not going well for him.
The couple things make me kind of lean towards Holland. Brunson's 37. He's been knocked out 5 times. Holland has the physical advantage on the feet. He's got the length. He's got the size. But yeah, the experience though is a bit of a question mark for Holland, because he hasn't fought anyone at this level as of yet. His takedown defense is only 52% also, which is a little concerning. I think I want to and Brunson hits 3 takedowns a fight. Not super accurate, but he hits a lot of takedowns. But I think I'm still going to go with the bigger, younger guy. But like I said, it's a bit of a toss up. It's kind of good that we have different picks here. But how do you see the fight finishing? Either Holland via knockout or what? Brunson via what?
I think Holland's real path to victory here is he's got to knock him out, right? Like, you know, like he's not going to go 5 rounds with Brunson and come out looking better. Because first of all, you know, like if he's hitting Brunson and he's not knocking him out, like, what does it look like? You know, and Brunson throws, you know, in my opinion, when he gets in exchanges, throws better volume, better combinations than Kevin Holland. In addition to that, he's going to have grappling top time. If this goes 25 minutes, you can count on the fact that Derek Brunson is going to have, you know, 10 to 15 minutes of top time. So I actually think that, you know, Holland's only path to victory is that knockout. And that's sort of why I like Brunson here, is that, like, I actually think there are lots of different ways that this could go. He could ride him out with tons of grappling. He could, you know, win a striking exchange and go 25 minutes winning that way. He could knock him out too. You know, like, he's got power in his hands. We saw him, you know, absolutely mop the floor with a striker like Leola Machida. So, like, for all of those reasons and the fact that I just have so many paths to victory that you could draw for Brunson, and it seems very narrow for Holland, I think that's why I have to go Brunson in this one.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting fight. I'm looking forward to seeing how this one shakes out, and even more so now that we have different picks. But I'm not hitting 49% of my picks by accident this year, Dan. I know what I'm doing here, all right, Mr. 42%. Yeah, we definitely.
I'm not doing a coin flip. I'm doing something slightly worse than that.
Exactly. But we're on the upswing, guys. Don't worry. It was a lot worse, surprisingly. If you're just if this is the first episode you listen to,
you got in at the right time.
Yeah, consider yourself lucky, because you would have been. Would have been broke by now. We were talking about some hashtag throw them in a parlays earlier, or prop bets. What do we like here for props and or parlays?
So I mentioned my prop that I loved earlier. I like Max Griffin wins by decision. You can basically get a guy who I think you should play. You know, obviously you picked against me on that one, but if you're playing Max Griffin, I think that's the right one, because he's gone to decision in all of his fights, with the exception of the ripping Ramiz Brahimi's ear off and losing to Colby Covington in his debut like 37 years ago. So I like that fight going to decision, and I also like Max Griffin by decision. So wherever you feel most comfortable in there, I like that one. I also think, as far as like a parlay goes, I love putting Grant Dawson in one here. You know, at negative 200, the number doesn't look great, you know, or you know, I think it's even edged a little higher than that, right? I think we said negative 225 earlier.
Yeah.
That seems a little steep, but, like, at the same time, like, I love the physical advantages he's going to have moving up a weight class. So I like putting him in one. And I would say, if I'm looking to put him in one with somebody, you know, maybe Macy Chiasson. Like, Macy Chiasson seems like she's a safer play. And if I'm going to put two people together, that seems like one I might like.
There you go. Dan's playing matchmaker now. He's putting people together in parlays. So, all right. Now, I forgot we have to do a lock pick. Just a reminder, since I'm waiting here, I'm 2-0 since we started doing locks, up 63% money. Dan is a 1-1 and down 39%. Since we switch back and forth every week on who drafts first, I'll give you a first pick this week. This episode.
All right, well, that's good, because I have one that I'm pretty passionate about. I'm going to take JP Bayes. I think JP Bayes' advantages over Bruno Silva are very clear. I love his wrestling. He looked great on the Contender Series doing it. And I think he's a cinch to win here.
All right, there you go. JP Bayes, if you get on DraftKings, when I posted all these lines, he was at minus 182 at that time, so get in there while you can. I'll take a little bit of a more favored fighter. I'll take Macy Chiasson at I don't think minus 215 is too bad for her, because despite losing to Landsberg, she is looks like the real deal, and Renault's on her way out. So we'll take Macy Chiasson, and you can take JP Bayes, and that will be our locks for the week.
Both Fortis MMA fighters too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they have a lot of fighters on this card.
And they had two last week come away with wins too. Jinyu Fry and now the second one's escaping me too. Who else? Oh, Ryan's fan knocking Misha Serkinov silly.
Yeah, a pick we had wrong. That's why you got it out of your memory very quickly.
I just beat that one right out.
Exactly. That's the way it goes. We will be back on dropping late Sunday, early Monday, with our recap of how we did with this fight card, and we'll break down the news of the week. We'll talk about the UFC's return to a live crowd at UFC 261, is it, I think? 261. We can talk about, like I said, we'll talk about that on Sunday, but we'll just get a quick estimate for Dan. How many people will Dana White kill by having a packed stadium of fans in the middle of a pandemic?
You know, I understand that this is a gambling podcast and it is our job to make predictions, and that is one that I just don't want any of the juju of. This one's going to be a pass for me.
That was just me taking a dig at Dana White, but regardless, we'll have news like that. We'll ignore the possible risky behavior by the UFC, and we'll just tell you about the awesome three title fights they have on that card, and whatever else happens in the next few days, we will let you know on the Sunday/Monday podcast. In the meantime, make sure you follow me at Twitter, Jeff Fox Writer, and Dan would be Gumby Vreeland. And you can follow our writing at sportsgamblingpodcast.com and MMA-manifesto.com. And like I said earlier, make sure you get in there before the fights kick off on Saturday in our pick'em contest. You can win $50 to whoever you want in the world, within reason. I guess that was pretty much wraps us up for this podcast, and as usual, I guess I better leave you with words of encouragement from Motorhead and Lemmy. That would be, they say I'm born to lose, but gambling's for fools, but that's the way I like it, baby. I ain't gonna live forever.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier has arrived on Disney Plus.
The world is upside down. We can't lose this fight,
Bucky.
If we do this, we're gonna do it our own way.
Experience the 6-episode event.
We're partners, co-workers, not necessarily a team. No.
We look damn good.
Marvel Studios' The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, now streaming only on Disney Plus.